From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. If you're a religious institution, it's not easy to measure your success. Faith and devotion can be abstract concepts, so a lot of churches use the hard numbers to explain how they're doing. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is one of those American Protestant sects that uses missionaries to spread the word, and so growth is important. But how do you count your people to truly reflect how much you're growing? Turns out it's pretty complicated. The LDS Church counts one way, pollsters and sociologists count another way. And who are you supposed to count exactly? People on the rolls or the people who actually go to church on Sunday? Today in the program, we're exploring the questions of growth within the LDS Church and looking at just what those numbers mean after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're asking what should be some pretty straightforward questions. How many people are in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints? How many people are Mormons, essentially? And then this one, how fast is the church growing? Now, there are all kinds of questions that will come from those numbers, like what do they tell us about the popularity of Mormonism at a time when a Mormon is running for president, or how well is the church keeping its members active and engaged at a time when people seem to be questioning the value of organized faiths around the world. But you've got to start with the numbers. And it turns out that's complicated. Take the numbers in the United States. The LDS Church says there are some 6.2 million members in the U.S., Independent researchers put the number at more like 4.4 million members. Now, the difference lies in who should be counted. Depends on what you mean by Mormon and how you do the counting. In the United States, there are numbers that suggest Mormonism is no longer among the fastest growing faiths and, in fact, seems to be having a difficult time holding on to its younger members. We're talking about the numbers today and what they mean, and we invite you to join the conversation if you like. If you have comments or questions, 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Joining us on the program is Joanna Brooks, who blogs about Mormonism at the online magazine religiondispatches.org. She's the author of the memoir, The Book of Mormon Girls, Stories from an American Faith. She's a professor of English and Comparative Literature at San Diego State University, and she's joining us today from San Diego. Joanna Brooks, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Doug, thank you for having me.
So I wanted to start with you. We're going to bring some other guests into the conversation here in just a moment, but I wanted to start with something you wrote in an opinion piece on Religion Dispatches a while back. And you took note of this projection that was made by the sociologist named Rodney Stark back in the 1980s, in 1984. That projection that he made is often cited in these conversations about growth and the LDS Church. And Stark said that then, in 1984, that Mormonism was really going to take off in the next 100 years or so. And I wanted to start with this. For those unfamiliar, explain the significance of that projection, of that prediction.
Right. Rodney Stark is a sociologist, and in 1984 he made what was really a fairly jaw-dropping projection that the LDS Church would grow to have 267 million members worldwide by the year 2080. I mean, at the time the church's population was probably about 5 million worldwide. And, you know, that projection set the backdrop for two decades of significant, of very rapid global growth for the church. The church's membership increased from 4.4 million to about 11 million members during the 1980s and 1990s. And Stark's projections and, you know, what appeared to be the increasing pace of growth worldwide carried theological significance for members of the church.
So what, essentially, it gave the church in some ways a kind of expectation, that the sense that that something was working, I guess, that God was blessing them, that they were in God's favor, I suppose.
That's right. Well, as a modern faith, you know, as a faith founded in 19th century America, a faith that from its very first moment was marked by a proselyting mandate, a proselyting impulse. You know, the growth of the church was a sort has served as a sort of proof of its veracity, of the veracity of Mormon teachings, of the effectiveness of the gospel and of the institution itself, its rightness. So growth carried theological significance for LDS people. It always has.
So does the church measure success by, you know, you hear often, and I should mention that we invited a representative from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to join us for the conversation. They didn't give us a reason. They declined. They sent some facts and some statements, which we'll get to in a bit. But you hear this a lot, Joanna Brooks, that church leaders saying, look, the numbers don't matter, that we don't measure success by the numbers. So why is this, why is growth or the idea of growth or numbers, why are they important theologically?
Well, and, you know, and it should be noted that, you know, the LDS Church is very careful about the records it keeps.
Yeah.
You know, Mormonism takes membership records and data very seriously. You attend a Mormon ward, you know, in any city in the world, and on an appointed Sunday of the month, the ward clerk is going to walk the aisles of sacrament meeting and count heads. You know, and so,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, every day members of the church also take statistics very seriously, and not just membership statistics, but activity rates, which I'm sure we'll get to later in the program. So, you know, even if the LDS Church institution itself is very cautious about projections and numbers, the members who feel so deeply about this modern American faith and who have invested their lives, many of them, 2 years or more, actively proselyting for it, you know, hold growth very close to our hearts. You know, and there are scriptures in, you know, there are scriptures in the LDS canon that talk about the gospel being taught to every nation, kindred, and tongue. There are, you know, biblical scriptures about a stone cut without hands from a mountain that rolls forth to fill the whole earth that have been interpreted in modern times by Mormon people as referring specifically to our religious movement. So given the deep personal investments many LDS people have made in the proselyting efforts of the church, you know, seeing the statistics of mark growth is personally very significant. Now, you know, some of the new data that's emerging, which conflicts with this picture Stark gave us in the 80s mm-hmm. of Mormonism as the fastest-growing faith, have, you know, perhaps served as an occasion for recalibrating narratives about Mormonism, trying to make sense of not only its growth, but its maturation and all that comes along with that.
I don't want to spend a lot of time with this, but what does Stark say about all of this now?
You know, he's been challenged at various points by scholars in the field of Mormon studies and has been fairly protective of his numbers, but there has been no definitive rejection or renouncement of them by Rodney Stark. We still find the idea that Mormonism is among the world's fastest-growing faiths or the world's fastest-growing faith repeated, you know, in media depictions of Mormonism. It's taken on a life of its own.
So we've been having some difficulty with Joanna's line with the studio there. I think we have it fixed. So, Joanna, I'm going to give you a chance to put on some headphones here in a moment. Let me introduce the rest of the guests while you do that. Ryan Cragen is joining us. He teaches sociology at the University of Tampa in Florida, the author of several articles on Mormonism. Earlier this year, he co-authored a study with Rick Phillips on Mormon demographics for the American Religious Identification Survey from Trinity College. And he's joining us today from the NPR member station WUSF in Tampa. Ryan Cragen, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Matthew Martinick is joining us. He writes about LDS church growth and about the church's international presence for the Camorra Foundation. It's a privately funded research group that focuses on the LDS church. Martinick has his own blog, ldschurchgrowth.blogspot.com. It's based in Colorado. He's joining us from NPR member station KRCC in Colorado Springs. And Matthew Martinick, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
So Ryan Cragen and Matthew Martinick, I wanted to get your sense of what we were talking to Joanna Brooks about earlier, and that is the importance of the idea of growth. Ryan Cragen, why is that important for Mormons to give the sense that the faith is growing, that the religion is growing?
Sure. The way that I understand it is there's a key aspect of Mormonism that makes this very, very important. Mormonism is what we call, as sociologists, an exclusive religion. And what that means is they believe they are the one and only true church on the face of the planet. In order to find validation for that, in order to feel like God is actually favoring them, they have to see that they're growing, right? The only possible exception is that they're being persecuted and being killed. Otherwise, this is God's religion. God has to favor this religion. Therefore, this religion must grow. And that gives a lot of emphasis then to the numbers. They want to see those numbers going up to suggest, hey, this is God's church. God is favoring us. God would not favor anybody else because we are the one and only true church. Therefore, the numbers must go up.
Matthew, how do you see it? Do you think that that idea of growth, do you see that as being important within Mormonism?
You know, I do believe that is something that a lot of members and leaders of the church see as very important, because we're just trying to quantify, you know, what growth we do see. And just like what we discussed earlier, that idea of growth does give that reassurance that, yes, this is the true church. You know, looking at things historically in terms of LDS membership numbers in various countries around the world, that's not always held the case. There's been countries where membership has been stagnant or declined for decades, and that's reversed later on, or vice versa.
So to the idea, Joanna Brooks, let's check your – how do you sound?
I think I'm here.
There you are. Good.
Yay!
has it always been this way? That is, have Mormons always talked about growth, or is this in some way some kind of modern phenomenon that came around in the 20th century, say?
Well, I mean, looking historically, you know, as I mentioned at the top of the show, you know, among the first actions Joseph Smith took when organizing the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in 1830 was commissioning leaders to immediately go on proselyting missions, both in the United States, to Indian territories, and to Great Britain. I mean, there was a very heavy investment in proselyting right from the beginning. The growth of the church's modern missionary program, the program that sent young men between the ages of, you know, 19 and 25 in pairs, in white shirts and ties, really began in earnest in the 1950s. And it paid off. I mean, there has been substantial global growth of the church. There's also been a discontinuation of the sense that all Mormons should move to the United States, an encouragement of LDS people who have converted in countries around the globe to stay and build the church in their home countries. So watching global growth has become a major, you know, preoccupation and pastime for LDS people who feel deeply invested in their faith and have often given personally of their lives to, you know, support its proselyting mission.
Mm. So let's talk about the numbers. I guess we'll start with the official statistics. These are the statistics that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints reports. We'll make a distinction between the numbers globally and the numbers in the United States. I kind of wanted to focus on the U.S., although we will talk about trends happening globally. But in the United States, official statistics show there are just more than 6 million members. At least these are 2011 figures. I think they may be the latest we've got. 2% of the population, Joanna Brooks. And statistics show a 30% membership increase between, I think it was 1990 and 2008, something like that. Am I getting these about right?
Those are the official LDS Church statistics. And yes, and that's based on membership rolls. And that's very important because there is some discussion of how membership rolls are maintained according to LDS Church guidelines.
So 6.6 million. Ryan Cragen, there are, of course, there are other ways of counting them, and we'll get to the particulars. What is the Trinity College American Religious Identification Survey telling us about those numbers? You compare that to the 6.6 million that the official church numbers give you.
So ARIS uses a different method. It's a self-report method, right, where we survey literally tens of thousands of Americans because there's no other way to actually get that information. And then we base that off of self-report. So we go off of self-report numbers. There is a little bit of a complication, and this is where the numbers are going to start to get a little tricky. ARIS can only survey adults. So we miss out on the kids. when we give our estimates of numbers of Mormons in the U.S., that's self-identified Mormon adults, we're not including the kids. And the numbers that we find, let's see, I'm going to jump down here and find this.
Okay.
In 1990, the ARIS reported the number of Mormon self-identifying Mormon adults at about 2.5 million. And by 2008, that was about 3.15 million. So substantially different. And we also adjust the number that they make up as a percentage of the population. The Mormon Church and Pew are reporting that it's closer to 2%. We see it as closer to 1.4%, which puts them in line with Jews and Muslims, actually.
What does your survey say about LDS growth rates? The church statistics, as I mentioned before, have it at about 30%. Your survey has it at like half of that,
yeah,
almost.
About 16%. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the difference between the way and I'll get you all to talk about this, but Ryan, I'll start with you. What's the difference in the way the official church counts its members and the way you're looking at it?
As I noted, the ARIS looks at self-report. So when we call people up, and it's a telephone survey, when we call people up, we ask them a very straightforward question. What is your religion, if any? And they can respond whatever they want. I mean, they literally can say whatever they want. So we're looking for people who say LDS, Mormon, something along those lines. They get flagged as being Mormon. That's where we get the self-identification. The LDS Church doesn't count numbers that way. It's interested in people who have been baptized. And that's pretty much it. As long as they can prove that they haven't died and they have not officially resigned their membership from the religion, they're counted as members. Even if they haven't been to church in 30, 40, 50, 60 years, they're still on the rolls as members of the LDS Church.
Matthew Martinick, why do they count them that way?
And each religion counts their adherents differently. Some Christian denominations count only those who are active members of the church, of their church.
Yeah.
And in terms of the LDS Church, I'm not in a position to say what the church officially believes or teaches in regard to this matter. But, I would see it as emphasis in terms of the significance of the actual ordinance of being baptized and being confirmed member of the church. And because that covenant that is made is taken so seriously, that's the reason why those members are not dropped from the membership rolls, even though they may be inactive for half a century.
So essentially, what you're saying is that church leaders are – it's kind of an expression of a hope that at some point they may come back?
I think that's a part of it. I would say most members of the church in the United States have been inactive for – a period of several months or more during their lives. So I think that's a piece of it. That's just the way the church counts members. It's, I would say it's almost analogous to how the Catholic Church counts, infant baptisms. It's pretty similar in terms of, it's more of in terms of, emphasis on the actual, covenants being made in LDS beliefs. And just keeping track of those membership records, regardless of the activity status or the worthiness status of those members. So,
Joanna Brooks, is this a kind of a typically Mormon idea that at some point we hope to get them back, so let's keep them on the rolls and let's count them?
Well, I'd agree that it's a reflection of how seriously the church takes its responsibility for members of record. Going through membership lists, talking about the individuals whose names appear on those lists, whether they've attended, that takes a significant amount of energy and attention in each Mormon congregation. Mormons are assigned to look out for one another via programs like home teaching and visiting teaching. Even people who don't attend church are often assigned visitors from the ward. And there is this sense that the church has a custodial relationship, even to LDS people who are in the process of disaffiliating, who want to disaffiliate. And so the gap between the membership of record that the LDS Church tracks through its statistics and the self-identification that sociologists like Ryan and the Trinity religious identification survey tracks, there's a big story there. There's a story that reflects a gap, perhaps, between, you know, the church's perception of its own membership and the way people who have identified as Mormons in the past or may continue to identify as Mormons, you know, think about themselves.
So, Ryan, first of all, Matthew mentioned that different faiths count their members in different ways. Is there any faith that counts its members like the LDS Church does, that includes people whether they're active or not?
Probably the best example would be the Catholic Church, just because of its sheer enormity. So it doesn't actually know how many members it has. But most of the smaller religions, your mainline Protestant churches, they don't count their numbers the way the LDS Church does. They clean their rolls. They clean them out by listing basically those who aren't attending anymore. They drop them. And, you know, they won't do it immediately. It's not like you miss one Sunday and you're gone. But they will actually clean their rolls periodically. The Adventists have actually been doing this recently around the world, in fact. And they've cut millions of members from their rolls because they're not attending anymore. So most of the smaller religions that are actual denominations and somewhat organized, unlike, say, Pentecostals, or not Catholics because they're just too big, most of them actually do clean their rolls and they don't report the numbers the way that the LDS Church does. So the LDS Church is kind of unique in being a smaller religion that is only reporting those numbers. And one thing that I wanted to point out is they could really kind of address this concern very, very easily if they just reported one additional number, and that was attendance.
Yeah.
So they could report the members of record and then report, as an aside note, the attendance every Sunday. And that would pretty easily clarify what's going on, but they don't do that. And that gives the impression then of these inflated numbers that membership is much higher than it actually is.
So do you think that mainstream Mormons have – you will use the word, Ryan, an inflated image of how many people are active Mormons, I guess.
Absolutely. I have many family members who are still LDS. And when I hear them talk about the numbers, they're reporting the LDS Church's current number, which is about 14 million. And that, me being who I am, I immediately go, no, it's not even close to that. At best, they might have half of those who still self-identify as Mormons. The numbers are wildly inflated, and most Mormons, I think, still believe those numbers because they get them. There's still an emphasis on those numbers. They report them at every general conference. They still talk about what the membership is and how many members have been converted. They report that every year in the church almanac. So they still put an emphasis on the numbers, even if they try and kind of minimize how important the numbers are. It's still pervasive, and members are aware of that.
Well, Matthew, we won't ask you to speak for the church, of course, but why not report the activity rates or the actual attendance numbers themselves? Do you think you have a sense of why they don't?
You know, I've always asked myself that question because, you know, just like we're discussing, you know, that would make things a lot easier to understand and be able to get a better idea of in terms of people who attend church and identify as members of the church. You know, and I think a lot of it is, it's kind of a mixed bag. I mean, you know, I think a lot of it is that there's a lot of places in the world where that number is very low. And, you know, for example, a lot of the research that I do for the Cumorah Foundation, we interview returned missionaries, mission presidents, and a variety of members of the church and all over the world to be able to make estimates in terms of member activity rates. And, for example, there are some countries in Latin America where we estimate only about 12 to 15% of the nominal Latter-day Saints that are on church records attend church regularly, you know. And so there's that sense of, you know, that the numbers are very, you know, much inflated compared to the number of active members or the number of active members. But at the same time, you know, there's another factor to keep in mind with that, too, is a lot of places outside the United States, you have a lot of people who are not yet members of the church attending church, and they're counted in church attendance as well, too. So you would also be including those who aren't members as well into that statistic. And in some areas, that number is fairly large, mainly in Africa. And so that might be another factor. But to be honest, I think a lot of it's just the church is very careful in terms of how it reports a lot of its activity numbers.
How many you figure are active LDS in the world today?
In the world?
Yeah.
You know, our estimate for the United States is about 40%. And when we make these estimates, they're based on about five or six different factors, ranging from the ratio of nominal members, those are the ones reported officially by the church, divided by the number of congregations in that area. So that gives us an average of so many members per congregation. So we use that statistic to calculate the activity rate. We also look at things like seminary and institute enrollment, which is published by the church every year for the church education system. We also look at missionary reports and member reports in terms of sacrament meeting attendance in various wards and branches in different countries. We look at a lot of different indices. And to answer your question, you know, we would say about 40% are active in the United States. Internationally, we'd say that number is quite lower. I'd say probably about 23% are active is what we would guess.
So number, give me a number. Like how many active Mormons in the world?
In the world, we'd probably say it's around 5 million.
Ryan, what number do you figure?
Yeah, I think he's pretty accurate. It's somewhere around 5 to 7 million.
So 14 million on the books and something like 5 million who are active LDS. So, Joanna, what does that do to the brand? what does that do? If people were to acknowledge that number, how significant is that?
Well, and let's be clear, there's three different stories going on here at the same time. One is, you know, trying to keep track of the numbers of members on the books and then trying to keep track of the number of people who identify as Mormon, which is what Ryan's body of data does. So if you were to call someone on the phone, you know, would they say, yeah, I'm a Mormon? And then the third story here is those who are active, those who attend every week and hold callings and pay tithing usually. So there are three different stories about Mormonism going on all the time. Who really belongs, who really feels like they belong, and who is really acting like they belong. And members play all sorts of, you know, members tell themselves all kinds of stories to try and, you know, manage these numbers and the different stories they tell about our faith and to interpret their responsibility to those numbers. And that story, you know, there are as many different stories as there are LDS people. We can see that those interpretations falling into certain genres. I should say there's not a great body that I'm aware of what we would call qualitative research. Yeah. We have
what it all means, right?
Right. We have very fine quantitative research like that done by, you know, the Kimura Foundation and by Eris, by Ryan, by Rick Phillips. But we don't yet have a very rich body of what academics would call qualitative research, where sociologists or ethnographers have spoken to Mormons one-on-one and gotten their life stories or their narratives and interpretations about what the growth or the, you know, lack of growth or disaffiliation might mean.
We need to take a break, but let me take a call before we do. 801-585-WEST is the number to join us. Thad is with us in Salt Lake. Thad, welcome.
Hi. I wanted to build on something your last speaker was just saying, which is that if you look at literature in sociology on religion and you look at survey data, one of the things you see are that people will often say, you'll ask them, did you attend church on Sunday? And people will say yes. And then you ask them, what did you do on Sunday? And it will involve everything but going to church. And so there are a lot of people out there who would say, I'm an active Mormon, but they don't really go. But that doesn't mean that they don't identify and it's not part of their identity, even if they're not, you know, kind of active church going, you know, much like this is very true, you know, among Catholics and other groups. So could they talk a little bit about, you know, this difference between this fourth group, which are people who, you know, identify as being Mormon, view it as being very important, but don't necessarily go, you know, are not active all the time.
Ryan Craig, and you start.
Well, we do know people in the U.S., and it's kind of a unique phenomenon to the U.S., over-report their religious attendance. And it's actually by about double. So when you regularly ask people in surveys, you know, did you attend religious services last week? About 40% say they did. If you actually go and count the people, which some sociologists have done, it's about 20%. Mormons do report greater attendance, but there's a pretty good chance you could bet that that's overinflated, right? And it's probably closer to half of what Mormons are reporting as well, which would put it closer to maybe 40%, 50% are actually going every week. And the caller has a good point. I mean, just because somebody says, you know, I'm Mormon doesn't mean they're going. It may still be salient and important for them, but that's not necessarily the same thing. So there are lots of different dimensions of what we call religiosity, and he's tapping into that.
Matthew Martinick, what do you think?
Much the same thing as what Craig just said. You know, it's a lot of it is, you know, there's a lot of dimensions of religiosity, and, you know, I think those members of the church who consider themselves members but aren't attending are definitely the exception to the norm.
And Joanna, you're sort of what you were saying earlier was kind of getting at that. This idea of people who like the idea of it, is whether they go or not, is another thing, maybe.
Who actually belongs, who feels like they belong enough to say that they are a Mormon, and who, you know, actually attends. These are three, you know, different understandings of what it means to be Mormon. And I would say, just going to Thad's, you know, question about trying to get at activity rates, you know, the Pew Forum came out with a survey of Mormons that tried to use different numbers than the ARIS, and they reported something like 77% of self-identified Mormons saying they attended church weekly, which is an eye-popping number that lots of us who attend just say, well, I'm really not sure that many people are there every week. But it reflects the difficulty in tracking these different groups of people, actual members of record, and people who will identify, will describe themselves as Mormons, and people who are active church-going Mormons. It's a difficult story to tell because of the Mormonism size in the world, in the U.S., and because of the privacy of the church with its fastidiously kept statistics.
The insularity part of that Pew study you took note of, Joanna, and we could do a whole show on this, but showed that one of them was that for a lot of Mormons, 50-some-odd percent, 57% I think it was, said they only really hung out with other Mormons.
Right. And this is something, you know, it's important to talk about the Pew survey. And I'd actually like to hear Ryan talk about it a bit, because there's a question of who did Pew talk to? There's a sense, I think, among some sociologists that Pew talked to a certain, you know, oversampled is the technical term, Ryan, in some areas, perhaps, that would give us the stronger sense of LDS insularity.
Yeah, that's correct. They oversampled in the Wasatch Front. And we know that the Wasatch Front, or Mormons from what we call the Mormon Culture Region or the Wasatch Front, are very different from Mormons outside of the Wasatch Front. And they did actually, what they did from a methodological standpoint is they went in and took and interviewed more people from that area than other areas, and then using a statistical method, they weighted it, is what it's called, so it looked like the rest of the nation. But there's no way that that could actually be accurate, because they did spend too much time oversampling people in the Wasatch Front. So when we look at those numbers compared to the ARIS numbers, which are a nationally representative sample with no overweighting in specific regions, they do some weighting by other things, the numbers don't line up. And they don't line up with the GSS either, the General Social Survey, which is another nationally representative survey. So we know their numbers are off. To what extent, we don't actually know, because we don't know the specific methodology and how they did that. But we do know – I mean, they admitted they overweighted in the Wasatch Front. Mormons in the Wasatch Front are not like Mormons outside of Utah.
And in the Wasatch Front, 57% said they hung – or in this Pew sample, 57% said that most or all of their friends are also LDS, which tells another story about Mormon assimilation or lack of assimilation and the impacts of assimilation on identity.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we could do a whole show on that, and maybe we will. Joanna Brooks is with us. She blogs about Mormonism at religiondispatches.org. She's also the author of the Book of Mormon Girl, Stories from an American Faith. Ryan Cragen is with us, a sociologist at the University of Tampa, co-author of the study Mormons in the United States from 1990 to 2008. And Matthew Martinick is with us. He writes about LDS church growth for the Camorra Foundation and at ldschurchgrowth.blogspot.com. Go to our website, by the way, for links to all of those. We invite you to join us, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@KUER.org. We'll take a break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about growth and the LDS Church. And we invite you to join us. 801-585-WEST is our number, our email address, radiowest@KUER.org. We have with us Joanna Brooks, Ryan Cragen, and Matthew Martinick. Let's go to the phones. Shelley is with us in Salt Lake. Shelley, welcome.
Hey, Doug. It's Shelley Sessions. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Good. Hey, I just thought I'd call and give my own experience with this exact subject. I was obviously born and raised Mormon, LDS, and when I got a little bit older, into my 20s, I hadn't really been an active member for, I'd say, 10 years, and so I decided to, I knew I was still considered a member even though I wasn't an active member, so I sent in a resignation letter asking to be removed from the records. About a month later, the bishop, who I didn't know because I don't attend church, he showed up at my door, you know, really kind of given me the third degree about why I wanted to no longer be a member, and was I sure I didn't want to be a member. And then he said, you know, you need to realize if you're not going to be a member, if we're going to remove your records, your baptism will no longer be valid in the eyes of the Lord. And I just thought that was very manipulative of him because we know growing up in the Mormon church, and I knew that. I knew my baptism was null and void at that point. I hadn't been attending church either, and it wasn't important to me because I didn't want to be a member of the church any longer. But I just thought it was interesting how he came to my door and really was really adamant, you know, about getting information from me and really trying to convince me not to do it.
Well, I have to say, we're getting a lot of emails related to this. People talking. Here's one from Brianna who says she grew up in a Mormon family but has been inactive for years, yet is still bothered by the fact that she's still counted. Some people deliver resignation letters. Here's Steve who says he delivered one, hasn't yet received a confirmation that he has been taken off. Wesley sends this saying, I've asked for my membership to the church to be removed, but they haven't removed it. So, Joanna Brooks, will you talk about that? Shelley and the others, they're talking about the fact that some send letters and they officially do it. Some get, you know, visits from, you know, their people in the parish or whatever. Some who, you know what I'm saying? Talk about how complicated this part of the story is.
I think the volume of email you're getting reflects that it is, you know, numbers aren't just numbers. Yeah. Numbers reflect heavily on the aspirations of the LDS people, on their self-perception. Former Mormons or people who were raised Mormon who no longer want to affiliate with the faith take numbers very seriously as well, and sometimes find in, you know, church statistical procedures and, you know, the church's own theological interpretations of its numbers, you know, reasons for criticism and suspicion. So this is a subject that arouses a great deal of feeling in LDS people and in former Mormons. And again, there are many different narratives afloat in the LDS and in, you know, the formerly LDS, you know, community about why the church conducts itself as it does, about why people are disaffiliating, about what the impact of, resigning your membership could have on the church's public standing. And there are a number of narratives floating in our communities about what the numbers mean.
This raises the question of retention rates. Ryan Cragen, I wanted to come to you on this. What caught my eye were the retention rates for young people raised Mormon. In your study, you show that retention rates of young people raised Mormon have dropped in the last 10 years. And I thought this was extraordinary. So from the 1970s through about 2000, there was 92% retention of young people within Mormonism, if I read that right.
Yes, that's correct.
And then from 2000 to 2010, the last 10 years, that 92% dropped to 64%. Now, that seems extraordinary.
It is extraordinary.
Do you have a sense of, again, here we go, we have the numbers and what do they mean, but
sure.
Do you have a sense of how significant that is, first of all, before we talk about what it means?
Well, it is statistically significant. That is a drop that we note. That's general social survey data. And it is a statistically significant, which I don't know if your viewers or listeners know what that means. But mathematically, it's a big difference, and it's a notable difference that's actually very, very meaningful. As far as, again, interpreting what that means and kind of the practical issue and why that's happening, I think really what we've seen is a transition based, and I hate to go as simple as this, but based on the internet, right? Information about the LDS Church is now so pervasive online that and young people are so well connected. Why would they not look for information outside of the official sources? And you actually see that transition happen once the internet took off, right? So our data go up through about 2000, and then we see that transition take place after 2000, and that's when the internet became pervasive. I think really what you've got is young people saying, why am I going to not look into additional information when it's so pervasive, so easy to find? And when they do find additional information, or for a variety of other reasons, they simply are deciding, I'm not going to stay. This is not in line with what I want to do.
Yeah. Joanna, go ahead.
The inference of Ryan's, you know, sort of Ryan's interpretation of the data, and I'm not questioning it. It's mm-hmm. certainly one I've heard and one that I think has merit. You know, is that Mormonism thrived? It experienced its statistical heyday, its greatest statistical growth domestically in the United States during a period of geographical and cultural isolation. And that period of isolation is ending. It ended a long time ago geographically, but it's also ending culturally,
yeah.
thanks to the internet. And that rates of disaffiliation are increasing the more that Mormon people have contact with information and, you know, and other communities outside of their own. You know, being Mormon was once the key to your life chances in employment and family, you know, and community standing. In some circles, it really still is. But as our, you know, exposure to and exchange with non-Mormon communities increases, you can get by without being LDS, and people take that opportunity.
You keep saying, and Matthew, I'm going to get to you in a minute here, but Joanna, you and Ryan mentioned that people have access to information on the internet. And I guess what we're talking about is skeptical questions about the origin story of Mormonism, questions about, you know, Joseph Smith, those kinds of – that's what you're getting at, I guess, right?
Yeah,
and again, this is and this is qualitative interpretations of quantitative data.
Right.
Yeah, and that's the narrative that, you know, that like any very orthodox religion, Mormonism makes a number – in its orthodox varieties, Mormonism makes a number of very strong truth claims, and that those truth claims perhaps, you know, don't stand up in the way they are presented by their most orthodox account in a Sunday setting when they're exposed to broader civic conversations, to public discourse, you know, but also that there are elements of LDS history that have not been discussed openly, that some young people are sort of stumbling into on their own now thanks to the internet. For example, polygamy is often cited as a reason, you know, discovering that Joseph Smith had plural wives, a fact that seems to be known to the rest of America, but that many Mormon young people these days grow up without knowing, and then discover and via the internet and feel experience it as an impetus to disaffiliate.
What about the idea of that in some ways this disaffection by some young people is a reaction to the church's position on gay rights, or, you know, its support for measures around the country that prohibit same-sex marriage? Is that one of those quantitative, qualitative things, Joanna Brooks? We just don't know?
You know, we do know quantitatively, and perhaps Ryan can speak to this, that among millennials, among younger people, LGBT issues rank differently in importance, that they feel different as a generation about LGBT issues than older generations, and that this does impact their religiosity. And so that is a narrative, another narrative that is circulating within progressive Mormon communities, that young people are turned off by the church's record of opposition to same-sex marriage, its investment in initiatives like Proposition 8. Among progressive Mormon women, you also hear, you know, again, these popular qualitative narratives, these interpretations that high rates of disaffiliation or inactivity among young Mormon women are evidence that young people, young women especially, don't feel at home with the very conservative gender theology of the LDS Church. Orthodox LDS people have their own set of interpretations as well. I want to make it clear. So again, all of these are qualitative interpretations and narratives that are circulating among Mormons.
Wait, what do you mean Orthodox? They see it that we're in the end of days, and so people are going to start leaving. Is that like this is an indication of that, or something like that?
Especially around the proposition around the Proposition 8 issue, when a number of LDS people did resign their membership very publicly as a show of – as a protest, a narrative, you know, gained ground among Orthodox Mormon people that this was a time of winnowing and of sorting out, when there would – you know, when the membership – the wheat would be sorted from the chaff, as it were, and that as adversity, to use sort of a language internal to the community, as adversity grew and the distinction between the church and the world, as Mormons say, grew, that – you know, those who were not true believers would be sorted out of the community.
Matthew, forgive me for leaving you out. I want you to jump in. What do you make of that?
You know, I think my views are pretty different compared to the other with those who are also with those who are also participating in this program, in terms of the internet and its influence on LDS growth in the United States. And the reason why I say that, you know, I really don't think that necessarily the internet's had a major negative impact on growth. And just looking at the rise in internet usage in the United States over the past 10 years, and if you look at the growth rates of the church during the 1990s and compare those to the 2000s for the LDS Church in the United States, both membership and congregational numbers. And congregational numbers are a more reliable statistic, considering they, you know, you have to have so many active members to staff congregations, and we haven't had any indication that the number of active members has changed from last decade versus the 90s. And those numbers, that rate's really been about the same for both decades. And so I think the way we can interpret that is, yes, the internet has made it much easier for those who are kind of sitting on the fence and whether or not they want to remain, you know, consider themselves members or just totally leave the church. It's made it much easier for those to do that. While at the same time, it's also opened up opportunities for online proselytism.
But you've got a 30% difference in retention rates over the past 10 years. First of all, do you acknowledge that something's going on?
Yeah, and I think one of the most apparent ways we can see that is with the missionary numbers. So if you look at the number of full-time missionaries reported by the church, in 2002 was the highest year we've ever had the most members serving missions. It was about 62,000, and that number dropped to 52,000 just 2 years later. And it really has stayed about the same until just last year, and went up to 55,000. Now, that decline in number of missionaries, you know, has occurred for a number of factors, I believe. One of them is decline in LDS birth rates about 20 years ago. But I do also think that, just like what we've been discussing, you know, the retention rate for young adults has definitely declined.
Why do you think?
You know, and my primary thought on that is just based on the increase in secularism in American culture. And I think a lot of it, too, is also the church has become...
So you're saying younger Mormons are going the way the rest of religious people. They're starting to reconsider. Yeah. Yeah. So it's not this is not unique to Mormonism, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. Matthew Martinick is with us. We also have Ryan Cragen and Joanna Brooks, and we're late for another break. Let me take it real quick, and we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER and Sirius XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, talking about growth in the LDS Church. 801-585-WEST, the number, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We're running out of time, so I'll try to get to as many calls as we can. An email from Chancellor, who writes, "I've not been to church in years, but tell everyone I'm a Mormon. Church has taught me the most important things in life, honesty, hard work, and compassion. I don't always agree with the actions of the church, but believe it does more good than any other organization its size." Sammy writes, "Is most of the growth coming from births or from conversions?" We've heard that question a few times. Ryan, can you answer that?
It depends on where you're talking. If you're talking internationally, it's still conversions. Domestically, it's probably mostly from birth. There's still conversions, but most of the people who are converting to the LDS Church in the U.S. are actually immigrants. They're not people who are second or third generation Americans. So most of the growth in the U.S. is mostly births. Outside the U.S., it's still mostly conversions.
Let's see. Michael is with us in Orem. Michael, welcome.
Hi. Yes. Thanks for having me on. Just a real quick question. I was just wondering, I actually serve my mission in New York City, and most of our converts, as you just alluded to, were either immigrants, not educated, and definitely we hardly ever baptized whole families. I was just wondering, in your research, if you've really been able to qualify what kind of people are joining the church in the western part of the world, as far as socioeconomic status and such.
Ryan, you've done a lot of that. Do you want to take that one?
Sure, and I don't want to take too much time. But if you look in the developed world, the LDS Church's growth is largely stagnant. It's not growing very much. When it does find converts, again, when we're talking developed world, we're talking kind of Western Europe, Australia, some of these places. When they do convert people, it's often immigrants. When you leave the developed world and you're looking at kind of the developing world, the LDS Church actually has virtually no success in the least developed countries around the world. They don't do well in the least developed countries. Countries have to start to develop in terms of education and technology. They have to start to develop and actually start to hit a slightly higher stage of development and be fairly stable before the LDS Church will even send missionaries there. And then they have a period of relatively rapid growth. But once countries reach a certain level of development, they pass through what I call the secular transition. Basically, the interest in Mormonism pretty much declines, and we've seen this in the developed world for the most part, except among people who are still coming from developing worlds or developing countries. So, and then even within countries, you actually see that Mormons compared to, say, Jehovah's Witnesses and Seventh-day Adventists tend to attract people who are slightly higher in socioeconomic status, but not the highest. So they're not getting the people who are the most developed, kind of your most educated individuals. They're getting people who are arguably kind of middle or lower middle class is the people that they tend to attract in the developing world. In the developed world, it's immigrants and the very poor.
Matthew, anything to say about that? Do you want to add anything there?
Yeah, I totally agree with Ryan. What Ryan just said in terms of, you know, most of that growth in the United States comes from, you know, children born to the church. That's the United States. That's definitely through conversions. In terms of wealth, you know, that's a huge predictor in terms of growth rates. And those countries, you know, that are going through that secular transition and actually just right before that happens in terms of developing economically are those places where the church tends to grow most rapidly, not only in membership, but in terms of quality of leadership and resources. You know, but then again, it's not the wealthiest that are joining the church. It's not the poorest that are joining the church in those places. It's usually kind of the middle class that are most attracted to the church.
Joanna Brooks, let me ask you this finally, about a minute left. What kind of challenge now does this pose for the 21st century Mormons? You say it may be the time for Mormons to explore how to nourish and strengthen Mormon identity among these challenges, I guess.
I think the numbers reflect a religion that is maturing, a religion that is dealing, as it has never dealt before, with secularism, with, you know, increased life opportunities outside of the Mormon world, that's scrutinizing itself and really what it means to belong and how one expresses that belonging. It's a religion that's become very politically conservative in the last 50 years, and that increasing conservatism has caused many members who might have remained affiliated to disaffiliate. So, you know, this all marks a coming of age for Mormonism, and it's happening right as the faith comes in, you know, the scrutiny of the presidential election.
Joanna Brooks, Ryan Craig, and Matthew Martinick, thank you all very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Radio West, a production of KUER News, the show produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Go to our website, by the way. You can add your comments to the conversation.